So we are holding on Kuftes Zayin Amud Beis, about a little over halfway down the Amud, the line against Lushava. About two-thirds of the way down the Amud, I guess. So we said in the Mishnah, we had the case where a two-story house collapsed. The ground floor is owned by one person, thank you. The second floor is owned by somebody else. The whole thing collapsed. We said that they split the debris, and we said that if one of them recognizes some of the stones, the Mishnah said he can take them, and they count for him towards the cheshbon. So what does that mean? They count towards the cheshbon. Rava thought to mean that it means according to they count for him towards the calculation against the broken ones. Meaning, Rashi says that the one who, let's say you had 100 stones, let's say, one of them recognized
the intact ones.
We're talking 100 altogether, let's say. The whole building was built out of 100 stones total, let's say. You have now half of them broke, so you got 50 whole ones, 50 broken ones. If it weren't for anybody recognizing anything, we said each one would end up with 25 whole ones and 25 broken ones. Now, let's say, for example, one of them recognizes 10 of them are his. So Rava thought to say that it meant like this thing. What we'll do is we'll give him those 10. Corresponding to that, the other guy is going to have to take 10 broken ones. That disposes of 20 out of the 100 stones. Now we have 80 left. So each of those will split. Each one will get half of the whole ones and half of the broken ones. But it comes out, therefore, still, it comes out that the one who recognized some of them comes out with more whole ones. Like this, he would have gotten only 25. Like this, since he recognized some of them, he ends up with 30 whole ones. There's other mafarshim that say even a different calculation by which he might end up with even more than that. Maybe you give him those, plus he gets his half of the other ones. Tosfos has yet another explanation that lefi cheshbon shvuros means that we would go proportionately about based on the number of whole and broken ones that are in this area. So in other words, he gets more of the whole ones that are in this area, and the other guy ends up with more of the broken ones that are in that area. Whatever.
Why not do it proportional?
Because the idea we think that it means if he says va'olus lemin acheshbon, then it counts for him towards the cheshbon. It sounds on the face of it like he has a certain advantage in it. Alma, which means that Rava holds kiven to Alma any yodea. So what happens? We talked yesterday that the situation in the Mishnah was Reuben says I recognize these stones, and Shimon says I'm not sure. Maybe they're mine. Maybe they're yours. I don't know. And therefore we said he ends up giving them to Reuben. So it sounds like once the other guy says any yodea that I don't know. Then he's much worse off. He ends up having to take broken ones corresponding to these whole ones. He ends up with more broken ones than he would have otherwise. But Abaya asks him, just the opposite. You should argue the one who says, Reuben, who recognizes these stones as his, should be in worse shape. Midahani yoda tfeila yoda. Because he only recognizes these, he doesn't recognize the others. Trulessly, it implies that he doesn't own any of the other ones, any of the other whole ones. Otherwise, we would expect him to recognize those as well. The idach kula dehechninu. So on the contrary, then it should mean that all the other whole ones, maybe not all, but not, should go to the other. Maybe not all of them necessarily, but at least he shouldn't be getting an advantage. He shouldn't be getting an advantage based on the fact that he recognized some of them. Elam Rabbi Lefi Cheshbon Shleimus. So right, Abaya says what the Mishnah means, therefore, is he gets according to it counts towards his number of whole ones. So in the same scenario as before, again, there's 50 whole ones, 50 broken ones. Like this, each of them is supposed to get 25 whole and 25 broken. Sorry, each of them is supposed to get, no. You had 100 stones to begin with, yes, 50 whole, 50 broken. Each of them is supposed to be getting 25 whole ones and 25 broken ones for a total of 100 between the two of them. Like this, what we're saying is, out of his 25 whole ones, 10 of them are going to be the ones he recognized. Then he gets another 15 whole ones, and then another 25 broken ones. Okay, so the question is, in that case, then what advantage does he have by that? So, Mela, according to Rava, you can understand. He has a certain advantage by recognizing some of the stones. Now he ends up with a larger share of whole ones. According to Abaya, if anyway, he's going to get the same number, what's the difference whether he recognizes some of them or not?
The same number, he can get more whole ones than the broken ones.
If we're saying that each of them is going to get half the whole ones and half the broken ones, what does it help him if he says, I recognize that it's not this whole one, it's this whole one. What's the difference? What's the difference? The answer is, l'malbana ravcha. You could have, for example, some of the bricks were made a little bit wider than others.
Okay.
Yes, well then, fine.
That's nothing.
No, but it's still a certain advantage. So it's still a certain advantage. If he recognizes them, he still, he may only get the same number of whole bricks, but he has an advantage now that some larger ones, inami tina de ma'abda, or you might have sometimes the material, the clay that the bricks were made out of, was better mixed. So therefore, again, if he recognizes those, it's not the number that he gets more, but it's the quality. Exactly. Mishnah says, habayis v'haliya. Another case where
that's the final conclusion.
That's the final conclusion, yeah.
So it goes like what?
So it goes, so you still split 50-50, yeah, you still go with one time by, yeah, and you still split 50-50, but if he recognizes some of them, then yeah. But the Smith points out one thing. I mean, if he ends up recognizing more than half of the whole ones as belonging, and more than half of the unbroken ones as belonging to him, and the other guy says any idea, sure, he's going to be able to take all of those because he recognizes them. Mishnah says, Habayis v'haliya, another case where you have a house and a ground floor and a second floor. Rashi explains that here we're not talking about a case where one person owns one and the other owns the other. Rashi explains, based on what we're going to discuss in the Gemara, that we're actually talking about over here, the second floor is rented out to somebody. That makes an important difference, because then you get into the question, what exactly is the landlord obligated, who lives on the ground floor, obligated to fix and what he isn't, as we'll see in the Gemara. Tosfos talks about not necessarily actually and Tosfos discusses that maybe the Gusa can still be Shel Shnayim. Rashi takes out the word Shel Shnayim because Shel Shnayim would imply that it actually belongs to one person and another. And here we're saying that no, it's a landlord and a tenant. Okay. So Nifcha Sahalia. So now what happens is, part of the second floor's floor caved in. Vein balabayit roitz l'sakin. So the owner of the ground floor doesn't want to fix it. Nifchasa means caved in. In other words, it's not the whole thing caved in and it's unlivable, but you have some area of it, as we'll see in the Gemara. How much? It caved in, so now some of it is still usable. The floor, yeah. So now you have some of it is still usable, but some of it is not. You have a hole there. So, the owner of the house does not want to fix it. So, what the owner of the second floor, not the renter, of the second floor, the tenant in the second floor, is allowed to yerid v'dor l'mata. He can go and live downstairs. Until he fixes up the second floor for him. Rabbi Yossi says, not necessarily when we say the balabas has to fix the ceiling, doesn't mean the whole thing necessarily.
He can live downstairs, but
we'll see in the Gemara what exactly. No, paying rent not necessarily. No, because he was paying rent upstairs, but it's still included in his rent. We'll see in the Gemara what exactly it means, what he's allowed and not allowed to do downstairs. Great. Rabbi Yossi, atach the notion of particular v'hal elyonus amaziva. Rabbi Yossi says not necessarily is it the whole expense of fixing the ceiling, and the ceiling, which is the floor, the second floor, goes on the owner of the place. No, the bottom one just has to give the money towards the tikra, which is the beams, the flooring. V'hal elyonus amaziva, the one on top has to provide the plaster that's put on there in order to strengthen it. As we'll see in the Gemara what the reason behind that machlokes is. So the first question is nifchasa b'kama. When we say that the floor caved in upstairs, how much of it are we talking about caved in? Rav Amar b'Ruva. Rav says this din applies only if most of it caved in, most of the floor area. Or Shmuel Amar b'Arba. Shmuel says as long as it's four tefachim. Four tefachim.
Four
by four, yeah. So, Rav Amar b'Ruva, he says, why does Rav say it's not enough if it's just four tefachim caved in? Because he figures, Adam dur chetzi l'mata v'chetzi l'mayla. It's reasonable enough a person can live half upstairs and half downstairs. What would be if you're missing, if an area 4x4 tefachim is caved in? It's not like it prevents you from using the rest of the house. What it does is you're missing space that you could have put one piece of furniture there, let's say.
And if it's a cupboard?
Same thing. So whatever. So let's say, for example, fine. So you had, this is a space where you would have put a cupboard, let's say, or whatever. So what you do is then Rav would say, fine, in that case, You're not, you yourself are not allowed to go live in the house downstairs. You will be entitled to tell the guy downstairs, I'm going to take this cupboard and put it in your place until you fix this. Every time I need something from the cupboard, I'll come down. Other than that, I'll live upstairs. So Rav figures a person can do that. Or Shmuel, I'm a Barba, where Shmuel says even if it was only four tefachim were broken, then the same din applies, because you can't expect a person to do that, to schlep up and down every time he wants. So therefore, he can live in the house downstairs also altogether, full-time. Hechidom, the Gemara asks, what's the scenario exactly? When we say that the guy downstairs is responsible to fix the attic, so let's see. Ida Omar Aliyazu, what's the case of it? If the case is where he said that I'm renting you this attic, this second floor, Azda, well then, if it collapses, it's gone. The same way as we learned before cases about, for example, I say that I'm renting you Chamer Zeh, and it dies, I'm not responsible to get you another chamer. Other such cases. Tzvina Zu we had earlier, we had a bunch of cases like that in the sixth paragraph. This should be the same kind of thing. Fine. Let the downstairs guy say, tough luck, it's your mazel that it collapsed. It's not my problem. It's Aliyah Zu. Only this Aliyah was Meshuvah Zu. If he did, that's what we have to figure out. What is the Mishnah talking about? The Mishnah doesn't say. That's what we have to figure out. So if he said Aliyah Zu, Azza, then it's gone. El D'Omale Aliyah Sam is the case where is the case where he says, just I'm renting you an attic. Why do we tell the landlord you have to now accommodate the guy in your house till you fix the attic? Let him just rent him another attic, another second floor if he has one. That's where, okay, but the mission is not distinguishing that. The mission is just saying the second floor tenant has the right to say, I'm not going to live anyplace else. I'm going to live downstairs here with you in the house until you're willing to fix it. Why? Why shouldn't the, if you just said Aliyah, why shouldn't the landlord have the ability to say, fine, your Aliyah is not livable, most of it collapsed, or according to Shmuel, four tefachim of it collapsed, or whatever, fine. Okay, I have another attic there, I have another attic a couple of blocks away, I have another second floor a couple of blocks away, I'll rent you that one for the rest of the term.
He has all his furniture up.
So what? Okay, so you'll move your furniture. But why is it my, and like this also collapsed, you can't live upstairs anyway. Either way, you can't live upstairs. But why do I have to accommodate you downstairs in my apartment when I have a perfectly good second floor apartment for you a couple of blocks away? So the Mishnah has to be talking about a case where he says like this. This attic that I'm renting you is as follows. Kisalka solik bada. As long as it exists, as long as it's standing, then you go up there and use it. But if it falls down, then you can come down together with it, meaning you can come live down here. So in that case, yeah, he has to accommodate him in his house. So then the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel is how much of it has to collapse in order for that agreement to be triggered. Okay, the question is, Yachamayla Memra. But in that case, fine, but still, what's the chiddush? Ultimately, fine, once it's triggered one way or the other, of course he lives downstairs with him. In that case, fine, we have to figure out how much of it is needed to trigger it, but there's no chiddush in the basic din that he goes and lives downstairs until the balabas is willing to fix the place. El Omar Ravashi said no. Ravashi says no. The case is Domale Aliyah Zu Shao Gabi by Zeh Animakilaha. Suppose he says, I'm renting you this attic which is on top of this house. Now, by mentioning the fact that it's on top of this house, when that's very obvious, anybody can look and see that this attic is on top of this house, that implies the Hashabit Bayis Aliyah. By doing that, he's creating a shibud on the house relative to the Aliyah. He's saying, in other words, this Aliyah, which is on top of this house, amounts to saying, without saying explicitly like Rava said, it amounts to saying that if the attic collapses, becomes unusable or whatever, then you have rights in this house. So even though he didn't say it specifically, like Rava says, because then there's no chiddush in it, yeah, then it means he has, yeah. Yeah. As we find a similar case that Ravin bar Rav Abba said in the name of Rav Yitzchok, it happened once that a person said to somebody else, I am selling you this vine which has been trained to grow, and to rest on this. A dolis is a vine that's been trained to grow on something as opposed to just laying on the ground. So dolis shagavi parasik there that is resting, that is leaning on this peach tree. Ani merkalach, I'm selling you this. The neck got up higher. Later on, the peach tree was uprooted. The case came to the priya of the Omar, and he said, since he mentioned, in that case, you are obligated to arrange for him a peach tree that is, As long as that vine is still alive, as long as that vine still needs something to rest on, then you, since you said you're selling him a vine which is resting on this peach tree, then you have to provide him a peach tree. So the similar, so the Mepharshim discussed, the Rishonim discussed how, what the exact comparison is over here. I mean, here it's just the other way around. The house, the ground floor still exists. It's the aliyah that doesn't exist. Okay, so they talk about the exact point of the comparison, but basically the idea is that by mentioning on top of this house, he's implying, in other words, that there's a certain connection between the house and the aliyah. And therefore, if the aliyah is not available, then a house has to be provided. One interesting thing it says in Shulchan Aruch that Amar brings is this din would only, as far as the peach tree, would only apply if the peach tree was still uprooted. In other words, it's still something that in principle could be replanted, as opposed to if it was chopped down, where therefore it no longer exists. That would be the equivalent of the whole house falling down, and then there's different dinim. Here we're just talking about where the aliyah collapsed. Okay. Boy, Rav Abba bar Memo. So now Rav Abba bar Memo asks the question on the basic din that we're saying that the tenant on the second floor can go live downstairs. What does that mean? Shahudar, when he goes to live downstairs, does he go and live down there alone, meaning that he can force the balabas out of there and say, Kidimi Kora, it should be just like it was originally. Originally, when I rented the attic, I was living there by myself. I shouldn't have to now share it with your family. Or maybe both of them have to live there together. Because after all, the owner of the ground floor can tell him, I never rented you the aliyah, having in mind that I could be kicked out of my own house. So what is it?
Repair it.
Yeah, well, okay, but I don't have the money to repair it right now, whatever. In Tim Saloy Mashneim Dorim, boy, if you're going to say that, in fact, the din is both of them live in it together, then we have to ask another case. Shu Mishnamish, what about when the second floor tenant, when he uses the downstairs...
We answer the question?
We haven't yet answered it, although, again, we have the usual rule that many Rishonim take, that when the Gemara does Im Tim Saloy Mashneim, it means that, yes, the halacha is like that. Which would mean, in that case, that the halacha is... that he'd have to share it together. He'd have to share it together because we're going to continue. If you're going to say that they share it together, then we're going to ask another din, which implies that that's the halacha. Yeah. So if you're going to say that they share it, then we have to ask shu mishtamish. So now, when this person who used to live on the second floor and now is sharing it with the downstairs guy, how is he allowed to use the house? Derech psachim mishtamish. Can he walk in and out the ground floor door just like as if he always lived there? Or maybe does he have to go by way of the roof? Not the roof, but meaning the second floor. Maybe, in other words, like this, all this time, as long as his second floor was intact, how did he get up there in the first place? He climbed up the stairs and went to his apartment. Maybe now we require each time, if he wants to do anything in the downstairs apartment, maybe he should have to go upstairs to his apartment and then
come down.
Yeah, from the outside. He'll go down. Yeah.
You go upstairs, and then you go downstairs.
Yeah, think of like the two family houses they have here in Crown Heights, let's say. So you have each one has its own stairwell inside. Not so much privacy, actually. Marshall points out a different point in it. The reason why we might think we should make him do that, I mean, the Gemara is going to talk about, but the underlying reason might be because if he just goes in and out through the front door without having to go up and down, everything he does is going to be in the downstairs apartment. Whereas if he has to go upstairs first, some of the things he has to do, at least he'll do up there. And that way he's not totally taking over the bottom apartment. So how does he do it? Can he go in through the front, in and out through the front door, or does he have to go upstairs to his apartment and then downstairs from there through the side door? Mi ama kidimi kara. Is it that the landlord can tell him, well, you should do just like you did originally? Mama ikra derech gagin hashtanami derech gagin. You always, up until now, you were renting the second floor. You had to go upstairs to get to your apartment. Now also, to go to your apartment, you should have to go down. You should have to go upstairs first.
Directly.
And then from there, down to my apartment. Or maybe not. Maybe the tenant can say, Aliyah kabili aloi. I only accepted on me when I rented this place that I'm going to have to go up every time to get to my apartment. Aliyah v'yirid aloi kabili aloi. I never accepted that. I never rented it on the terms that I'm going to have to go upstairs and down. That's too much. Therefore, I shouldn't have to do that. If you're going to say that, yes, the tenant has a valid claim in that sense, and therefore he can go use the front door, no problem, which again, because it's an imtim talaimer, that is in fact halacha, then we have
to...
And
people will think that he owns the house now?
No, because
he goes through his front door.
Because he's living there. He doesn't have any kind of chazaka. He needs 3 years at least to have a chazaka on it, and the other guy can be moichel all that time. Especially if you have two families living there, it's pretty obvious he doesn't own it. However, we have to ask another question. What happens if it's a three story house? Mm-hmm. It's a three story house. So you have the ground floor, you have the second floor, and you have the top floor. So we know for sure, there's no question that if the top floor is, it becomes unusable for Tvachim Ruba, as we said before, Nachas V'Dover Dachtona, then there's no question he can go and live on the second floor. What about, though, if the second floor is the one that caves in, can he go and live? Does he go and live in the third floor, or can he go and live in the ground floor? Do we say, well, the balabas, the landlord can tell him, look, you rented the second floor, which means you knew every time you're going to have to go upstairs to get to your apartment. Same thing here. Then you go upstairs. You go to the third floor. Or maybe the tenant can argue, I only accepted on myself, I only rented it on the nest, that I'm going to have to go up one flight of stairs each time, not two flights of stairs. And that last one, so that last one, he's not allowed to live in the downstairs apartment, but if he does, then the balabas doesn't have the right to throw him out.
What about the second, the...
So the previous case, as we said, because we had imtim talaimer, so the halacha is, the tenant is allowed to, does live in the ground floor together with the landlord's family, and he does have the right to go in through the front door. He does not have to go upstairs to his apartment and go down the side stairs each time. Right. However, when you have a three-story house, then you're left with a suffix. So if he's willing to go live on the third floor, obviously, then there's no problem. He can do that. But if he's not willing to, and he argues that I have more rights to the ground floor than I do to the attic, to the third floor, then again, he shouldn't do that. But if he does, then the balabas doesn't have the ability. The landlord doesn't have the ability to throw him out. Then we said, Rabbi Yossi Yomar Tachta Noisin in particular, Chola. We said that Rabbi Yossi distinguishes. He says that it depends. We don't put the whole cost of fixing the thing between them, the ceiling of the ground floor, the floor of the second floor. We don't put it all on the landlord. We said the one downstairs provides the tikra, and the one above provides the maziba. So we have to ask.
The landlord provides the tikra, and the tenant provides the maziba.
So we have to ask my tikra. What do we mean by tikra? What do we mean in this connection by tikra? Now you have there's the actual beams, but then you have usually on top of the beams there would be sort of like nowadays. You have the actual beams, the actual joists. On top of them you have a subfloor.
Okay.
You have parquet or whatever, and on top of that you have the tiles or linoleum or whatever they put nowadays. Yeah. So what exactly is included in tikra? Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina Omar, kinim usnoyin. Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina says it means the sticks and the thorns. They use that, and in those days they would sort of weave those things into a mat. They put that mat down, and then they pour the maziva, which is the plaster, on top of it, because otherwise it'll just leak through all of the joists.
Right.
Yeah. So that's kinim usnoyim. Kinim means sticks. Usnoyim means thorns, which they would use to weave it together, kind of into a matting, which then they could use as a base for the maziva. So he says, in other words, that that's what's included in tikra. Ustini.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's that point. Yeah. Ustini. Lakish Ustini, that's many Mephoshim say that either his name was Stini or Ustini. That may be related to the name Justinian, whatever. Anyway, Omer Rish Lakish, he says in the name of Rish Lakish, Levachin. The Tikra includes boards. Means flat boards that you put on top of the joists. There's a different girsa, by the way, it brings over here on the side, that the Oruch has a girsa, not Ustini, but rather Vatina, which in that case is the end of the previous sentence. Kinim Usnoim Vatina. The mats that are woven together out of sticks and thorns, as well as the tina, as well as mud that's put to hold it all together. And then on top of that would all be the landlord. And then on top of that, you have planters. And then we continue. Amr Shim and Lakashur. Shim and Lakashimer, Lavachim, the boards. It's actually not really an argument per se between them. Mauki Yasri, each one is talking according to the minhag in his location. In Rabbi Yosef Chanina's area, the minhag was that above the joists, all you had was these mats, and then you pour the maziba on top of that. In Rabbi Shimon Lakish's area, they would use actual boards. One thing is some
approaches.
They're both in Eretz Yisrael, but some approaches point out, I don't know, they're both in the Galil, I think. Some Mephoshim point out, though, based on something in the Yerushalmi, that it may be a difference of not just different places, but what is the top floor, what is the second floor commonly used for? If it's just used for people, for example, then all you need is what Rabbi Yosef Ben Chanina is saying, these mats. If you use it, but for example, let's say there were places where it was an accepted thing that people can also bring their animals, their junkies or whatever upstairs on the second floor, and in that case, obviously, in a much stronger subfloor, that's where a shlokish is staying. So the Gemara tells a case. Hanu Beit Shei, to have a diary, there were two people who were living in a two-story house. One upstairs, one downstairs. Ifchis Ma'aziva. Now, what happened was the Ma'aziva, the plaster on the second floor's floor, broke. And now the problem is, kimashi maya iloi, when the one upstairs would wash their hands or anything with water, when they'd pour water on the floor, it would go and then drip down onto the bottom onto the bottom floor and cause damage. So the question is, mimasakin, who's responsible for fixing that broken maziva? Rav Chiya Ba'aba Amar Ha'Elyon Masakin. So Rav Chiya Ba'aba says the one upstairs is responsible to fix it. Rabbi Loi says in the name of Rabbi Yosi that the one downstairs has to fix it. The simon, and the sit, we'll figure out in a second what the reason behind it is, but first, a simon to remember which one said which, is the pasuk for Yosef Hurat Mitzrayma. Yosef is like Yosi, Rabbi Yosi, the second opinion. Hurat means it's brought down, so therefore that helps us remember that Rabbi Yosi is the one who said that the one downstairs is the one who has to fix it.
Hurat.
Hurad, going down, yeah. There's a vast number of interesting things that the Bali Drush talk on this.
Right?
No, there's a number of interesting things that the Bali Drush say on this, about the deeper ideas of this, about the relationship between Hashem and the world, and about the relationship between the Neshama and the Guf. Fine, okay. But so Yosef Hurad, he was brought down. Hurad was brought down to Mitzrayim from Eretz Yisrael. No, he's brought down to Mitzrayim from Eretz Yisrael. Mitzrayim up to Mitzrayim. From Eretz Yisrael, which is higher, he was brought down to Mitzrayim.
Who's that? Yosef.
So we see that
he was brought from
Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim. He was brought from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim. We're not talking about when his bones were brought up many years later. We're talking about him himself when he was sold. Okay, so like the Bali Jerush have a nice time with this, about different Ramazim, about the remez to the relationship of the Neshama to the Guf, and of Hashem to the world, etc., etc. Should we say that Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba and Rabbi Loi are essentially arguing on the same point of Rabbi Yosi and the Rabbanan of our Mishnah? Namely, Lamanda Omar Ha'Elyon Masakin, the opinion of Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba, who says that the one upstairs has to fix it. Kasavar Alamazik Lahavchas Asaf. Sorry, not Rabbi. Let's assume that, okay, so going back to our Mishnah, when Rabbi Yosi says the one upstairs has to supply the Ma'aziva, now, l'chora, why would Rabbi Yosi say he has to supply the Ma'aziva? The pashtus is because that's what waterproofs it and prevents water from leaking downstairs. So it sounds like Rabbi Yosi is saying the one upstairs, he being the mazik, he being the one who's pouring water on his floor, is responsible for supplying Ma'aziva to prevent it from leaking through.
See that from what?
Well, that's all we have in the Mishnah is Rabbi Yosi says that the one downstairs provides the tikra, as we just defined it, and not by implication, he says clearly, well, you know, it's a maziva. But we would assume at this point in the argument, why did he say the one upstairs has to provide the maziva? Presumably because without maziva, you have a stable floor. The problem is that every time you pour water on it, it'll leak through. You, therefore, are going to be a mazik. To prevent you from being a mazik, you have to supply maziva. In that case, that seems to fit with all machlokas over here with Amoraim. Laman d'Alma Oyin Masakin, Rav Chiya Ba'Abba, who says that the one upstairs has to fix the broken plaster over here to prevent the water from leaking down. Kasavar al Mazik b'half of the tafim minan nizik. He would argue, therefore, that a mazik has a responsibility to keep his potential hezek far away from the nizik, and therefore, in this case, he has the responsibility to supply the plaster to put down plaster. The one upstairs. Whereas the opinion Rabbi Loi, who says that the one downstairs has to fix the broken maziva, he would hold that the nizik is responsible for removing himself. You're the one who's having the problem. That water is dripping on you. You take steps to prevent it.
But the tenant is not the original mazik. The landlord is, because he didn't repair his floor.
The tenant is the one who's more directly causing the hezek by pouring the water on the floor.
Yes, but
if we assume, right, the landlord is now the one who's having the hezek from it. If we assume, therefore, fine, he's considered a nizik. No, because that's the thing. We assume at this stage the only purpose of a maziva is to prevent water from leaking through. In other words, the tenant doesn't really need the maziva at all. From his point of view, if there were nobody living downstairs, we're assuming at this point, he wouldn't need maziva at all. He'd be perfectly happy with just a subfloor. Why is maziva needed? So that his water doesn't leak downstairs. In that case, then, it sounds like Rav Yossi is saying he, being the potential mazik, pouring water on the floor, he has the responsibility to prevent that from causing any damage downstairs. That is why he needs to put up maziva. Whereas the Rabbanon of our Mishnah, who seemed to say that the landlord, the downstairs guy, has to provide everything, it sounds like they're saying that, in this case, fine, you're the nizik, you're the one having a problem with the water, you make sure it doesn't leak down to you by putting maziva.
Why can't we say we have to restore the place the way it was to begin with when you started renting it?
Because as long as it doesn't affect the usage of the house, why should he? The plaster cracks upstairs, but so what? That doesn't affect, on the face of it, at least according to our current understanding, we're going to see soon, this may be different, but right now, according to our current understanding, that doesn't affect the tenant's use of the apartment.
It does, because it makes the tenant become a muzzle.
Fine, but then don't pour water on the floor, not my problem.
How can you live without pouring water on the floor?
Why not pour water into a bucket or whatever? And when you're washing your floor, I don't know, use less water. I don't know.
You won't wash your floor that way.
You wash it with less water or whatever. You'll be careful around that cracked area. I'm just looking quickly in Marsha that all right. Now here, by the way, Rashi makes an important point that our machlokas over here that we're dealing with. At this point, we don't know this yet, but the maskana is that we're going to say we're not really talking about a landlord's and tenant's responsibilities at all. We're talking about, rather, unlike in the Mishnah where we were talking about a landlord and a tenant, here we're talking about the two of them are equal owners. The one downstairs owns his portion, the one upstairs owns his portion. Then it becomes a different question. That's a different question, right. Right. So
that's what Rashi's saying?
So Rashi mentions that, and Marsha elaborates on it. Marsha elaborates on it at some length to explain how that, because it ends up, according to the Maskana, we're not talking about the problem with water at all. We're going to see that. We're going to get to that soon. But right now, okay. All right.
Initially, how did you get to say that there was a tenant and a
landlord? If you look in the Rashi, Ifchis Maziva.
Yeah.
He mentions near the end of it, Velav Socher Mask you have. Here we're not talking about a landlord and a tenant. Here we're talking about a ground floor that belongs to one and a second floor that belongs to the other. That's the thing. Tamar Shah points out the reason what makes Rashi say that is because in the end of the Maskana we're gonna be explaining that the issue in our Mishnah is a different issue. So So on the face of it, though, at this point, when we think that the case over here is the same as the case of our Mishnah, which therefore well, we would assume that the same principle applies, regardless whether it's a landlord and tenant, or regardless whether it's two different co-owners. Either way, it sounds like Rav Yossi is saying, you being the upstairs person, you are responsible to make sure you don't cause a hezek to the one downstairs. And the one downstairs, can, according to the Rabbanon, could say, according to the Rabbanon, no, the one downstairs is the one going to be responsible to provide ma'aziva to prevent water leaking down on him.
Because
they would say, they have a concept called Alam Nizik Lahafka Safnu Namazik. You have a problem with somebody.
It's you,
the Nizik, you, the potential Nizik, have a responsibility to remove yourself from the situation.
Where do they take that from?
Because, we'll see. The problem with that is, the Tisbara, Rav Yossi, and Rabbanon, the Indian Nizik, and Pligi. But how could you think to say that Rav Yossi and the Rabbanon of our Mishnah are arguing based on that consideration of the dinim of Nizik and Mazik? Because as a matter of fact, we find them saying exactly the other way around. The Tanan, namely, we learn a Mishnah. We're going to learn in Baba Basra next month, Bez Hashem. Machikin etza ilim min abur esrim v'chomesh amma. You have to keep a tree at least 25 amas away from a pit. So in other words, if I planted a tree in my property, you have a pit in your property, I'm responsible to make sure that my tree is at least 25 amas away from yours, from your pit, or v'chorov v'shikma chamishim amma. If it's a carob tree or a shikma tree, which have much longer roots, then you have to keep it away chamishim amma, 50 amas, ben milamayla ben minasad, whether the pit is higher than the tree. You still have the problem, though, the roots of the tree are eventually going to get in under the pit and undermine it, so therefore that's the problem. Ben minasad, or whether they're on the same level, because then you're going to have the roots are going to come near the pit and start and undermine its walls. So either way, 25 or 50 amas is the case, maybe. Now, the Mishnah continues, if the one who owns the pit dug his pit first, and later on the other guy planted his tree, and the one who planted the tree has to chop it down, but the owner of the pit has to pay him for the value of the tree. In other words, so you have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven has a burr, Shimon has a ilan, as it has a tree. The tree is too close to the burr, so we're saying if he dug his burr first, we're going to make him chop down his tree. However, he has to pay him for it. Shimon has to pay him. Reuven has to pay him for the value of the tree. Yes. Ima ilum kadam. But if the tree was there first, lo yakut, then he's not obligated to chop it down. When I planted my tree, you didn't have a pit there. Not my problem if you dug a pit later. If you want your pit to be far away from my tree,
dig your pit
further away. It's not my problem. Then the Mishnah, so far we haven't gotten yet to Rav Yossi, but wait. Sopik, Zekadam. What if you have a Sopik, which one came first? Lo Yakut, then he does not have to, the owner of the tree does not have to chop it down, because I'm Moitz Mechavel of Araya. You want to prove that I'm obligated to chop down my tree? Show me that your burr was first. Rav Yossi says, never mind all that. No, even if the pit was there before the tree, the owner of the tree is not obligated to chop it down. The owner of the burr is digging in his property. The one who's planting the tree is digging it and is planting it in his property. They both have equal rights to their property, and therefore, yeah, neither one can say your thing is causing problems for me.
Because
therefore it comes out that Rav Yossi is saying that the Nizik is responsible for moving. You have a problem with the roots of my tree are going to damage your burr. Dig your burr further in your property. It's not my problem. But Rabbanon Savri Ala Mazik Lahakatatme. And then Rabbanon say the other way around. The Mazik, the owner of the tree, is responsible to take away the Hezek. And therefore we can force him to chop it down. Which is exactly the opposite. Because Rav Yossi is saying each one is in their Rishus. I'm in my Rishus. I'm entitled to plant a tree in my Rishus.
But you cannot cause damage in your tree.
You're not directly causing damage. We're going to see in a few lines. The Gemara is going to make a distinction. Years later, after you plant the tree, it's going to cause. I'm not responsible for that right now. If later on it causes damage, we'll deal with it then. But you can't obligate me to cut down my tree because eventually the roots of it are going to undermine your burr. You can't make me do that, says Rav Yossi. If you, the Nizik, have a problem, move your burr. Dig your burr someplace else in your property. So it comes out, Rav Yossi is saying that Rabbanon are saying Alamazik Lahakatatme, which is exactly the opposite of what we're understanding on Mishnah. Never mind, right? On Mishnah, to be saying, on Mishnah, Rav Yossi seems to be the one who's saying that the Mazik which is the second floor person, has to put up a maziva to prevent him from and the nizek, and according to Rabban, the nizek is going to be the one responsible for the maziva. So you can't understand that. So you can't understand the machlokas of the Amoraim on that basis.
And therefore,
well, we have a question. Ella, ikal amem of sligi. No. So if you want to say that if you want to say that Rabbi Chiya ba Abba and Rabbi Loi are arguing that their argument is the same as the machlokas Tanoim, you could say b'klus to Rabbi Yosi v'Rabban and dechosim habitzki. You could say yes, they're using the respective arguments of Rabbi Yosi and the Rabbanon over there. Yes, you would say the other way around. Would you say Rabbi Chiya ba Abba, who says that the upstairs neighbor has to fix the maziva, he would be going like the chachamim, that the mazik is responsible for removing his tree. Rabbi Loi, who says that the one downstairs is obligated to fix it, he being the nizik, would hold like Rabbi Yosi. You don't want your burr to be undermined by my tree's root. Move your burr. Right, the nizik. So that you could say they have that. What about Rabbi Yosi, Rabban and the Chacham of Eifleki? In that case, you have to ask, what are Rabbi Yosi and the Rabbanon over here arguing about? If we're saying that their logic over here seems to be exactly the opposite of their logic over there, how do we answer that? The answer is they're not arguing over here on the question of water dripping from one to the other at all. There's no problem. I don't care if water drips. No, the argument in this case is coming from the upstairs neighbor. They're arguing, in other words, the situation in our Mishnah is different than the situation that the Amoraim are arguing about. The Amoraim are arguing about a case where the downstairs neighbor is complaining, your water is dripping on me, I don't like it. Therefore, they have their machlokes. In that case, we would apply the usual thing of alamazik or alamizik lahaskatatma. The case in our Mishnah, we're saying, is a whole different thing. There's no complaint about water. The strength of the ceiling. Namely, we're talking about that it's not the bottom, it's not the downstairs neighbor is complaining, it's the upstairs neighbor that's complaining. The floor is not sturdy enough. If it doesn't have maziva on it, when I walk on the boards over there, when I walk on the subfloor, they shake. They shake. So one day, one of them may break or turn over or whatever, and I'll fall through. I'll drop in on you downstairs. So that's the argument then. Therefore, Rabbanon Savri Maziva Achduki Tikri, who? So therefore, it's like this. The Rabbanon hold the Maziva is basically there in order to strengthen the ceiling, in order to have to do that, to prevent floorboards from getting out of place.
Okay. Therefore, sweet because the water falls in the beam.
Never mind water. No, it's just the upstairs one is arguing that the beams are the floor is shaky, and if you don't put maziva, then I'm afraid I'm going to fall through. So that Rabbanon say he has a valid point. Without maziva, it's going to be a shaky floor. It's part of achzuki tikra. It's the downstairs one who's responsible for making sure that
we're saying we both like Rashi still.
So again, this is what Marsha says. This is the point why Rashi had to say that we're talking about over here landlord and tenant.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be.
Otherwise, each one owns their own part of the property, and the downstairs one doesn't have any responsibility to somebody who owns the. Think of the difference. Think of the difference between like a landlord and a tenant versus condos, right? If you have a landlord and a tenant, and the tenant's floor breaks down, yeah, you know, based on what we're saying over here, the landlord is responsible for fixing it. As opposed to if it's condos, the one who owns the condo, the upstairs condo, is going to be the one who's responsible for fixing it. Yeah. Okay. So the Rabbanon hold the maziva is basically there in order to strengthen the ceiling. So therefore, it's the downstairs neighbor who's responsible for making sure that it's a strong, steady floor. Therefore, he has to put up maziva. Rabbi Yosi Selvam, the downstairs, the landlord who lives downstairs.
Yeah.
Rabbi Yosi Selvam, maziva ashivu yegumasu. Rabbi Yosi figures that maziva is not really needed so much just in order to keep the floor steady. For that, you can just make sure that the floorboards are nailed in place. The purpose of maziva is ashvuya gumus. So it's just in order to make a smooth floor. Ashvuya gumus, alayim ashvuya. You want a smooth floor? Fix it yourself. Put up maziva yourself. And that would be the reason. Nothing to do with mazik and nizik, in other words, but rather the question of what is actually necessary for the house to be habitable.
And Rav Yossi thinks that what?
Rav Yossi says that the ma'aziver is only there in order to make sure you have a smooth floor. You want a smooth floor, because you don't have to hate. Go get somebody to put in a smooth floor for you. I'm not responsible for that. As long as the floorboards are nailed in place, are nailed to the joist, then that's it. I'm not responsible for anything. And Rav Yossi would say, would say that the ma'aziva is there in order to strengthen it. Just nailing the floorboards in place is heck and not enough. You need ma'aziva on top of it to make sure that it stays sturdy.
And therefore, if
the upstairs neighbor is complaining that I feel the floorboards are shaky, yes, the downstairs, the landlord is going to be the one responsible to put up ma'aziva. Going back though to our initial thing, we said, okay, so let's go back then to the machlokes of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Rabbi Chiya bar Rabbi Yosi. We said Rabbi Lloyd says in the name of Rabbi Chiya bar Rabbi Yosi, "Apachtin mesakin." The one downstairs, in the case where it's a problem of dripping water, not like we were just talking about right now, that's a question of a shaky floor where the one upstairs is complaining, but rather the original case that we were talking about dripping water, where it's the downstairs person that's complaining. So we're saying, he's saying that hatach and mesakin, the one downstairs is responsible to fix it. On the basis of, he says, on the mizik lahach hatachna. On the basis of Rabbi Yossi's opinion in Bava Basra. The problem with that is, Aini, how could you say that? Va'amar Ravashi, didn't Ravashi say, ki aveina be Rav Kahana, when we were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, have Ramunin, we used to say, mergi Rabbi Yossi be gire delay. Rabbi Yossi agrees if the damage is caused directly by his arrows, that even Rabbi Yossi would agree. You know, the case over there about the burr and the tree. Again, when I plant the tree now, it's going to be 10 years later that maybe that the roots are going to damage your burr. That's not a direct thing. But Rabbi Yossi would agree, if I'm doing something which is directly going to cause a hazard for you, even though it's in my rishos, of course I'm responsible to remove that. Lechora over here, the one guy is pouring water on the floor and it immediately drips downstairs.
And
isn't that due to delay? So he should be responsible to put up ma'aziva. That's what we're asking. Even Rabbi Yossi would agree in that case that you, the Mazik, are responsible to take care of that. So why over here? How could Rabbi Yossi be saying over here in the case of the water dripping downstairs that Rabbi Yossi would say you put it? And that if you, the downstairs tenant, the landlord, care about it, then you're the one responsible for fixing it. What exactly do you mean by giri delay, by the way? There's a focus over there, Rashi versus Tosfos versus the Ramban. What exactly is required for it to be giri delay? Does it require that it's his actual action? Does it require that the thing itself causes damage when it's put in its place?
Giri delay means
giri delay literally means his arrows. Yeah, proximate cause. But what exactly is required for it to be giri delay? When we learn it in Bava Basra, that's the Shem, we'll hopefully talk about it in more detail, but there's a couple of different possibilities among the Rishonim, what exactly is required for it to constitute giri delay. Whatever, in this case, all of those apply. He's directly pouring water on the floor and it's immediately dripping downstairs. So as soon as he puts the water there, it's immediately causing damage, and he's the direct cause of it by pouring it. The answer is the paski maya vahadonasri. You have to say that the case that they were arguing about is the water doesn't directly drip downstairs. He washes his hands, for example, on one place in the floor, it runs along the floor, and then it reaches the cracked area and it drips down. So it's not a direct thing. It's not due to delay. Or similar idea, other Mephoshim bring up that maybe Rambam, for example, talks about it gets absorbed into the floor and eventually then it leaks downstairs. Either way, it's not due to delay. It's not a direct immediate thing.
And what's the difference?
That's the difference. Rabbi Yossi would say in that case, fine, I'm washing my hands in my rishos. You're worried about it. It's causing you damage in your rishos indirectly. Fine. Fix the plaster if you want, if you're concerned about it. Same thing as with the tree and the burr. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Chachamim would say that not. The halacha is like the Chachamim, by the way. It depends, actually. The halacha is rather like Rabbi Yossi. Ala nizik lahasav katasma. You have a problem. You, the owner of the burr, have a problem with my tree. Fine. Don't make your burr over there. Make it someplace else. You have a problem with water indirectly dripping into your apartment from mine, but it wasn't a direct thing. It's not where I wash. It's immediately coming down. Fine. Because I'm saying, hey, you want to fix the plaster, go ahead. I'm not responsible.
Of the second floor.
Of the second floor, yeah.
I mean, the area that's damaged on the second floor belongs to the second floor, not to the...
Again, we're talking about over here a landlord and a tenant. So the whole house belongs to the landlord, but the tenant is the one living over there. Right, if he were to wash his hands directly or pour water or whatever directly over the damaged area, yeah, it would be due to delay, then he'd be hired. But if he doesn't, if he washes his hands in one room and it runs into that one and leaks down, then it's not his problem. He's not required.
We know that the landlord can here in this discussion.
Because Rashi said at the beginning of the discussion, that was the point. That was the point.
Where
because
did you say that?
Rashi said it, but there again, and the Rashi is chis maziv. I'm sorry. You're right. Rashi said it's not. It's talking about. You're right. Let's backtrack a little bit. The case of the dripping water is talking about two different owners.
Okay.
Yeah. The case of our Mishnah, we were talking about that part of the thing caved in, and we're responsible to fix it in order that the tenant can continue living over there. That is talking about a landlord and a tenant. So that's the difference. In other words, that's the point. In other words, it's the difference of who is the complaint coming from. Again, if the complaint is coming from upstairs, the part of it caved in, or I'm afraid it's going to cave in, that's when we talk about in terms of a landlord and tenant relationship. When we talk about the complaint that's coming from downstairs, your water is leaking on me, that's when we're talking about two of them. Yeah. Mishnah says, "Habayis Faliyah Shal Shnayim Shenaflu." If a house and a ground floor and a second floor belonging to two different people, here we are again talking about that is co-owners. Shenaflu, the whole thing collapsed. So not like the previous Mishnah where only the attic caved in. Here the whole building collapsed. Like
the first
Mishnah. Shal Shnayim, yeah.
Right.
Omar Bala. Well, it also because we're going to see in the continuation of the Mishnah, we're talking about the expenses of rebuilding it. No, because we're going to talk about the expenses of rebuilding it. Obviously, if it's a tenant, he has no responsibility to rebuild. So suppose the owner of the second floor says to the owner of the ground floor, let's rebuild it. I want to have my place back to live. In other words, rather, when he says, let's build it, meaning you, Reuben, who lived downstairs up until now, you pay the cost of building a one-story building, and I will pay the cost of putting the second floor on top of it. Who ain't it right to live? Nice. However, the downstairs guy says, I don't want to. I have someplace else to live or whatever it is. So now what happens is the one who owns the second floor can build the ground floor, the Darbasah, and he can live there alone until the one who lived there before pays him for the cost that he for his outlay, and then he'll move out of there and start building the second floor. There is, by the way, there's a number of interesting verklach that are brought on the deeper meaning of this Mishnah. There's one, for example, Rabbi Yechezkel Ivershitz has a vort on it that we're talking about. For example, a Beinoni, I don't know if necessarily a Beinoni like Tanya, because Rabbi Yechezkel lived before that, but whatever. Somebody who's struggling in Avodas Hashem, he's like the downstairs person, so therefore he's not building because he can't by himself. So the Baal Haliyah, meaning a tzaddik, comes down and gives him a boost.
Right.
And then gives him a boost and like lives in his house in order to give him a boost to do what has to be done. Yeah.
And
Rabbi Yenison Abishitz lived in a number of different places. No, he was in the generation. He was about two generations before that. He lived in the first half of the 1700s. He was the Rav of Altona Hamburg, Ramsbeck for many years and various Prague and various other places. Yeah. Anyway. There's a couple of other ones. There's one actually that Rebbe brings in a hadron on Bava Metzia from Tashin Chavav that Rebbe quoted a mimer that seems to be from Tzemach Tzedek that explains it in terms of the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. We know that Yerushalayim shall Maila, and we know that Yerushalayim shall Mata. It's the Gemara tells us in Tainus that the Eibishter says, Kaviyachol, I'm not going to come into the Yerushalayim shall Maila until Yerushalayim shall Mata is rebuilt. So like the Eibishter, so to speak, says, even though the Beit Mikdash up Lamaila is still intact, I'm not going to go in there and let my Shechina rest in there until there's an actual Beit Mikdash honor. So what happens? So you have a bias and an aliyah. What happens, though? This is the Tzemach Tzedek saying this, and they're never quoting it in the Sefer. So the ideal way to do it, then, is the Baal HaBayis, meaning the ground floor person, us, does our job of rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash Shel Mata with our Maisin, and then the Eidishter correspondingly builds the Yerushalayim Shel Maila and comes into it. What happens, though, sometimes you have, unfortunately, that we don't want to rebuild the house. So what does the Eidishter do? So to speak, he sort of forces the issue. Yerushalayim Shel Mata will be rebuilt. You won't appreciate it. You'll have Yerushalayim Shel Mata, but you won't appreciate the spiritual Yerushalayim, which is the idea of Yira of Hashem. You won't have reached that level yet. However, I'll still build it for you. I'll still prepare it for you until Yitzin Lo Yitziyosev, until you pay by doing tshuva, and then at that point I will be able to, then I'll be able to leave it for you. You will actually reach that level of Yira, and I will go build the Aliyah and the Rabbi Yehuda says you have a problem with that. If you're going to do like that, what do you have? If you're going to do like this, where you're saying the one who used to live upstairs is now living in the single floor house until the other guy pays him for what he laid out, the problem with that is now he's living in somebody else's property. He should have to be paying him rent. Rashi says the logic behind it is because otherwise you have a problem of ribis. Because he laid out money and then he's getting to live there for free, which is similar to what we learned before about you lending somebody money, you can't live in their property for free. Tosfos argues on that because what kind of ribbit? You didn't lend him anything.
No.
So therefore, Tosfos says that it's rather, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, it's the problem of zenen of a zeh koster. He's benefiting and the other guy is losing out because, as Rabbi Yehuda is going to point out in the Gemara, the house, the walls get darkened from use and whatever as long as he's living there. So therefore, zenen of a zeh koster, you should be obligated to pay rent. Ella, no. What we do is like this. What we'll do is we'll tell the one upstairs, you lay out the entire cost of rebuilding the whole thing, both floors, and you put up a roof on the second floor, the Yosheba Bayis. However, then you can live in the ground floor. Until the guy reimburses you for your expenses. So now we have tough luck on him. He didn't want to rebuild, so let him find someplace else. Or whatever, maybe we're talking about he has someplace else already. Yeah. So therefore, Rashi explains, in that case, then you have that the one is not benefiting anything from it, because he doesn't have to live there, he could have just as well lived upstairs. And the zeh lechoser, the other guy is not losing out, because he anyway wasn't going to be building it, so therefore he wasn't going to be living there anyway.
The guy downstairs.
The one who used to live downstairs, yeah. Tosfos explains a little differently. No, not that Tosfos apparently has a different girsa, not v'yoshev babayis, but v'yoshev bav. Meaning, what Tosfos says, what we do is like this. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the one who used to live upstairs rebuilt the entire thing, both floors. He goes and lives upstairs in his apartment like he used to. He keeps the downstairs apartment under lock and key until the guy is willing to pay him, and then he can move in. But then
he rent it?
Apparently not. No, because why should it? How could he rent it? It's not his property.
To get the money back.
No, but that's next. The only way you can get the money back is by getting the by the way, Mephoshim points out, why do we need to go through this whole rigmarole? Why don't we just go to Basin and force them and let Basin force the guy to rebuild it?
Sure.
Okay. So they give a couple of different answers. One is based on the Yerushalmi that we can be talking about where the guy who used to live downstairs is out of town. Basin does not have the ability to go take money from him when he's out of town, because we're not talking about something where we're not talking about like an emergency situation, like the Solomon or whatever, where you're allowed to. Therefore, they can't. There's another answer that Beforshim gives that even maybe if it was the fun of, since we're not talking about over here, it's not because of a loan. Mela, if he had lent him money and therefore he lost money because he lent the other person, then we can say that fine. If Basin can force him to pay it back. Here, it's not talking about lending it out. Here, we're talking about he laid it out. Fine, that's not the same thing. And therefore, maybe Basin doesn't have the ability to, but he can force the issue himself. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, B'shloshim makomos shana lanu Rav Yehuda. There are three places in Shas where Rav Yehuda teaches us in a Mishnah, also la'adam shiyahanu mimamen chavera, that a person is not allowed to have hanah from somebody else's mamon, unless he has the other person's permission. Rashi seems to say that later on, that basically we're talking about that Rabbi Yehuda would disagree. Now, we learned back in Bava Kamma, which we're going to deal with this a little bit over here also, we learned in Bava Kamma about the whole issue of Zenen and Zelei Chosev. You're getting benefit, the other guy is not losing. According to Rashi, it seems that Rabbi Yehuda would say, I don't subscribe to that concept at all. Even if Zenen and Zelei Chosev, you still have to pay for it. No, the halacha is that Zenen is Elei Chosev, with the constraints that we learned over there in Bava Kamma. For one thing, the other guy does have the ability to object to it, and if he does, then you do have to pay rent. You have to make sure that you're not causing any damage. If you cause even a small amount, then you're obligated in the full amount. of what you would normally pay for rental, and it's still up, and of course it has to be. Then it has to be still that it still has to be that Zelle Chosse, the other guy, is not losing out anything from it. Yeah. Okay. Tosfos learns differently than Rashi. Tosfos says Rabbi Yehuda would agree with the basic concept of Zen and of Zelle Chosse. He would say in these three cases the Chachamim made an exception. So what are the three cases?
Rabbi Yehuda. He doesn't hold up.
According to Rashi, it would come out that Rabbi Yehuda says, in general, I don't hold with the concept of Zenen and Zalei Chaser. You always have to pay. According to Tosfos, generally he would subscribe to that. Generally he would agree to that, but in these three cases, because in each of these cases, he is having a certain hana that from what somebody else did, where he did something improper. One is in our Mishnah, where Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you, the tenant, can't live in the downstairs apartment unless the second floor is rebuilt, because you would be having hana from the other guy's moment, because ultimately, after all, he is going to pay you for this house, and therefore it comes out you've been living in it rent-free, and you can't do that. What's the second one? Yitznam. This is a Mishnah that we learned in Bava Kamma. We also quoted it earlier in our Masechta. Hanosin Semel Atzaba. If you gave wool to a dyer, Litzvaya Le'odim, which is to dye it red, Litzvaya Shachar, and instead the dyer dyed black, or Shachar Litzvaya Odim. Yeah, we learned in Bava Kamma. Yeah. Or you're supposed to dye it black and dyed it red. Rav Meir Omer Nosin Le'Dmei Tzamri. Rav Meir says that what happens is the craftsman pays him the value of the wool, and then he can keep this. He can keep this wrongly dyed wool, because he says the guy's a gazlan by changing the instructions. We learned before, the mayor holds that if you change the instructions of our boss, you're called a gazlan, and therefore a gazlan. He was kone at Bishinui. Rabbi Yehuda says no, he's not allowed to keep the wool. We see if the increase in value of the wool after the dyeing is more than his expenses.
Dying wool,
then all the owner of the wool has to pay him is the expenses. And if the expenses are more than the shvach, then he gives him only the shvach, that's the lesser of the two.
The increase in value.
Yeah, in other words, we learned about this at great length there in Bava Kamma, and in fact we have a few different opinions how exactly you calculate the hoitzah and the shvach. Rashi over here defines the yitzia is the amount of expenses that the dyer used, the dye stuff, the wood to heat it up, his actual value of his labor. You compare that to the shvach, to the increase in value. Originally the wool was worth X amount, now with the dye it's worth X plus Y. You take the lesser of those two, the expenses or the shvach, and pay him that. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, you are not entitled to keep the wool, because, as Tosfos says, it's true, usually a gazlan would be koine b'shinui, but here the Chachamim said not. It's not right that you should have a benefit. Rashi says it also. It's not right that you should have a benefit that you're getting wool, which the other guy went to the trouble of buying. Therefore, you can't keep it, Rabbi Yehuda said. So there we see a second example where Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not allowed to have an offer of somebody else's money. The Idach Maihi, what's the third case? The Tan. This is the Mishnah we learn in Bava Basra, near the end of Bava Basra. Misha Parah Mitzas Chayvei. If somebody paid off part of his debt, the Hishlish Shtari. What he did is now he took his shtar and gave it and put it in escrow by a third party. So what happens? The usual thing you would do if you pay off part of the debt is you write a shtar, you write a receipt for that amount, or you write on the shtar itself. For whatever reason, they didn't want to do that. Therefore, instead, the loiva offers an alternative. Instead, I don't want you, the malva, to just keep the shtar as is. I'm afraid that you're going to later on claim the whole loan for me. Instead, what I want us to do is we'll put it in escrow by a third party that both of us trust. And then afterwards, when I pay off the rest, then yeah. Now, the omaloi, so now the loiva says to the third party, if I don't pay off the rest of the debt between now and such a time,
he gave him the...
He borrowed 100. Right. He, let's say, paid now 20 of it.
Right.
So now he gives the shtar to the shlish. Right. And he says to him as follows. I'm giving myself a deadline of, let's say, 6 months to pay off the rest of the 80. If I don't pay it off within X amount of time, 10 loy shtare, then I want you, the shlish, to give the shtar back to the malveh, and he will have the ability to claim the entire loan from me after all. In other words, what we'll do is we'll consider this 20, we'll consider this, he's doing it as sort of a penalty for himself.
Why?
Because what he's saying is, I will consider if I don't pay off the rest of the loan within a certain amount of time. So what he does is he says, I'm going to consider retroactively that this 20 that I paid so far was considered just a gift, not related to the loan at all. And therefore, I still owe him the 400.
It wouldn't be really.
Right.
We would consider really that as a gift?
Yeah, we could. Well, then when that went, so now comes the question. He has not really enough. So what happens? The attacker doesn't pay it within that amount of time. Rabbi Yossi says, fine, let the Shalish do what he was told. Give it back to the Malveh, and if the Malveh ends up collecting the entire debt, Rabbi Yehuda says he shouldn't give it. On the face of it, because Asal Adam Shiyahanim Imam and Chaveri, because you should not have the right to have hana from somebody else. The fact that this person didn't pay off the loan in time, you should not have the right to have extra hana from that without his da'at. Not because of ribis. Because then Rabbi Yossi would get no. Because then Rabbi Yossi couldn't disagree with that. No, because the fact is when he said I'm willing to pay the whole thing, it wasn't. I mean, we're going to talk in a minute whether it's an asmachta or not. But even if we say it's not an asmachta, it's not something that he would have voluntarily agreed to. It's something he feels under duress. He feels coerced to do that. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says don't. You're not allowed to take advantage of that kind of thing. So the Gemara says, though, Mimai, who says that this is, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that all these three dinim of Rabbi Yehuda, in our Mishnah, the case of the dyer and the case of the shtar, are all based on this consideration that Osala Adam Shiyahanim Imam Chaveri. Who says, the Gemara says, that that's correct? I can actually explain each one of these dinim of Rabbi Yehuda on a different basis. Ad kam like Amar Rabbi Yehuda Hocha, Elamishum de'ika Shachru Risa. Rabbi Yehuda might only say over here in our Mishnah that you have to pay rent because there's a problem. The walls get dirty when you live over there. Shachru Risa means getting dirty. Blackened, yeah. So therefore, no proof that you're not allowed to have hana from somebody else's mamon, maybe only in a case like this when it's actually cost him. He's actually losing out because he is going to end up paying the expenses that it costs to build a nice, newly built, newly painted house, and by the time he gets it, it's going to be with blackened walls. So therefore, it's not exactly, it's then, you're having hana, but you're losing out. In the case of the wool, which was dyed the wrong color, why is Rabbi Yehuda saying that you don't let him keep the wool, but rather you just pay him the less of the two, shvach or yitzia? Because mishum de kamashane, because he changed the terms, he did the wrong thing, and it's a knas. And we learn in a Mishnah earlier in our Masechta, kol mashana yodei alach hatzayna. When you do something different than you're supposed to, then yodei alach hatzayna. You have the lower hand. You get the lesser. Nothing to do with the general question of zenan or zelei chater or anything like that. The gimel is because instead of v'hotnan, it should be ditnan, really, because it's not v'hotnan would imply that's a question. Ditnan is just bringing a proof, as we say in the Mishnah, kol mashana yodei alach hatzayna. And umi shapara mitzvah chovinami. And in the case of the shtar that was partially paid off, maybe Rabbi Yehuda is saying you're not allowed to collect the rest, not on the basis of the question of not having hana from somebody else's mamon, but rather have asmachta, because it's an asmachta. Not just that we would say it is a valid condition. However, he went into it by under duress. No, we would say it's not even a valid condition. It's an asmachta. It's an exaggeration. He expected to be able to pay it off, whatever. V'shamin and lezer Rabbi Yehuda d'amar loy koni. And in fact, we find that Rabbi Yehuda says that an asmachta is not koni. Actually, Rashi says it's not like we know it from anywhere else. From this very place, we might explain Rabbi Yehuda as saying that he doesn't hold that an asmachta is koni. In that case, also, you can't necessarily understand it the way Rabbi Yehuda says.
So it has nothing to do with Zen, Nen, Abzele, Chaser, etc.
Tosfos, by the way, points out what Rabbi Yehuda accomplishes with what he says in the Mishnah. Again, according to Rashi's Girsa in the Mishnah, where we said that Rabbi Yehuda is saying you build both floors and then you live downstairs till the guy is paying you, don't you still have the problem of darkened walls? According to him, the answer is that's a different case because that's called zel loynen and zel lechaser. The other guy is losing. Yes, he's getting black and walls. You're not gaining because you have someplace else to live. You could just as well have lived upstairs or downstairs. So therefore, that's different.
if there is another place.
Yeah, well, that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. You build both floors, and then you live downstairs. Again, according to Tosfos themselves, it's not an issue, because Tosfos themselves would say you live upstairs, and you leave the downstairs empty. Here's another din in connection with this business about rebuilding the two-story house. Now, what did we say in the Mishnah? We said that the one who owned the downstairs apartment is responsible for building that part of it, and the one who owned the upstairs apartment is responsible for building that part. So, tachten abolishane. Suppose the one downstairs wants to change and make a different kind of wall for his part, for the ground floor. So it depends. The gvil, if he wants to do, let's say that the house was originally built out of hewn stone, cut stone, and instead he wants to use gvil, which is uncut stones, we'll talk about it in a few days, beginning of Bava Basra, the difference is a wall of uncut stones is thicker. The typical thickness of such a wall,
round stones.
Not necessarily round, just uncut, they're hewn on the sides so that they'll fit together, but the front and the back of them are left unhewn, they're left rough. Such a wall is usually wider. It's usually six tefachim. So if he wants to do that, shayman like, we listen to him. In other words, that's an acceptable thing because he's making the wall stronger.
Gvil is that.
Well, gvil has a few terms. Gvil basically means uncut. You're talking about gvil, for example, in connection with the Sefer Torah. It means unsplit parchment. Here it means unhewn stone. Yeah.
Except on the top and the bottom.
Right? I guess it means that the top and the bottom are hewn and just the sides are not. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, the gozis ain't shayman loy, but if instead he wants to use gozis, if he wants to use hewn stones, where they're hewn on all six sides, and such a wall is typically thinner, it's only five tefachim, ain't shayman loy, we don't listen to him, then the one upstairs can argue, I don't want you to do that, because that makes the wall weaker, it makes it more likely that my part will collapse. Similarly, the kfis in shayman loy, suppose it was built out of bricks, there's two ways of building with bricks as well, which also we'll learn in the first Mishnah of Bava Basra. You can build with kfisin, which is you take a brick, you split it in two, and a normal brick is three tefachim wide. You split it in two, you have a tefach and a half. You build two courses of them, like this and like this. Each one is a tefach and a half wide. The space between them, the one tefach, you fill up with concrete, rubble, or whatever. So you have a wall that is total four tefachim wide. Tefach and a half brick, tefach of rubble, tefach and a half brick. That's called kfisin. So if the place was built before with bricks of any kind, and he wants to rebuild it with kfisin, shayman loy, we listen to him, that'll make a stronger wall. Vilavainim and shayman loy, but if he just wants to build it with regular bricks, where you'll have only a three tefach wide wall, don't listen to him. In other words, he doesn't have the ability to do that unilaterally because it'll make it weaker. Obviously, if they both agree, then it's fine. We're talking about if the one upstairs disagrees. Right. Poskim also discussed. The question is this only if the minhag hamakom is not built that way? What if the local minhag hamakom is indeed to build with... What if, for example, the house is 70 years old? 70 years ago, let's say, for example, the local minhag was to build with gazes. By now, people are commonly build with grill, and now commonly people build with gazes. Does the same rule apply? That's the post can discuss that question. Fine. Similarly, if the one downstairs wants to make the ceiling of his part, where it's going to be the floor of the next one, if he wants to use cedar beam, shayman loy, then we listen to him, because cedar beams are stronger. It'll make for a stronger floor. The shikmim and shayman loy, but if he wants to use sycamore wood, we don't listen to him because that's weaker. It may break. I don't know. I guess so. I've never built with either one, but Rashi says over here, v'adrozim miskaimim v'ashikmin, that the cedar is stronger and lasts longer than shikma. Yeah. Well, my son covered, it can hold a heavier load, yeah. Okay. Where are we? If the one downstairs wants to make fewer windows in his part of the house, shayman loy, then that's an acceptable thing. Fewer windows means it'll be a stronger wall. Lahavis v'chalonis ein shayman loy. If he wants to put in more windows, the one upstairs can object. That'll make a weaker wall. Lahagvia ein shayman loy. If he wants to make his part taller, the one upstairs is entitled to object. First of all, it means it'll be more stairs for him. But second of all, also taller means weaker. Lamayat shayman loy. If he wants to make it shorter, then we listen to him. Sure, it'll make it easier for the guy upstairs. Yeah. By the way, one of the Mechorishim, the Ma'ane Achachma, says why do we need shayman loy, ein shayman loy every single time? Let's just list all the things that he can't do. And he says, what if, for example, he wants to say, I'll make a trade-off? Let's say, for example, I want to build, I'll build the wall stronger, but I'll put in more windows. No, the one upstairs is not obligated to accept that. You want to build the wall stronger, very nice, good. But I don't have to accept your argument that you're going to trade off for that, putting in more windows in.
We have to say that.
So therefore, we have to say it individual on each one. Yeah. Elyon Shebol HaShanes. Now, what about when the second floor guy won is building his part?
Right.
The same thing applies, but in reverse. The God is Shemin Lo. If he wants to use hewn stones, we listen to him because that'll make for a thinner wall. So therefore, it's less of a load on the walls of the ground floor. So therefore, that's acceptable. The Gvil ain't Shemin Lo. But if he wants to use Gvil, which is heavier, we don't listen to him because it adds more weight. The Kfistin ain't Shemin Lo. If he wants to rebuild it with Kfistin, we don't listen to him because that's four fucking six.
Like
Kfistin is the half brick. Half brick, rubble, half brick. So we don't listen to him. The Levanim Shemin Lo, if he wants to build it out of a single layer of bricks, which is three tefachim wide, we listen to him. Then that's
even
like
on
that.
The top floor.
Yeah, we're talking about on the top floor because you want the top floor to weigh less than it did.
It's going to weigh more.
Half brick, rubble, half brick is thicker and therefore weighs more. The rubble that you put in the middle weighs. So therefore, we don't listen. The bottom floor, the one on the bottom floor, can object and say, "I don't want you to do that. You're going to make my wall is more likely to collapse." But Levanim Shemin Lo, but if he wants to use regular bricks, then that's good. Barozim and Shemin Lo, the second floor guy, if he wants to use cedar beams for his ceiling, we don't listen to him because that's heavier. But Shikma and Shemin Lo, if he wants to use Shikma, that's good because that'll make for less weight. Larabas Bachalonis Shemin Lo, if he wants to make more windows, then we accept that. Lamai Bachalonis and Shemin Lo, if he wants to make fewer windows, we don't listen to him because that means the walls are going to weigh more. Now another question. Now, all this time we're talking about, if both of them, we learned in the Mishnah the case where one of them doesn't want to rebuild and the other one was, we just talked now about both of them want to rebuild. What about if neither of them has enough money to rebuild? So, what are they going to do with the property? So Rashi explains the question is that, let's say, so now they just want to sell the property. The question is, does the one who lived on the second floor have any rights to the land? Did he maybe only have rights to have his second floor apartment over there? Now that that's gone, he has no ownership of the actual karka, or maybe not. Maybe he has part ownership of the karka. Tosfos argues with that explanation because you can't just sell it. This guy has a right to build a second floor apartment over there. You can't just sell that and take away his rishus. If you sell it to somebody else, he can still claim from the other guy, "I have a right to build an apartment over here." No, so Tosfos explains, we're talking about, let's say, for example, that we say, forget about rebuilding the place, neither of us has the money for it, we'll plant there, we'll use it as a place for planting instead. So now you have the question, does the one who lives on the second floor have any right to the land as far as planting? Tanya, so one Vanessa says,
if they don't have, neither of them have money, can a guy from the top floor sell his share?
Obviously, he could sell it to somebody. Sure, of course. But the question is the actual land. Yeah. So, Tanya, one Braita says, "Ein lo lo zeh lo lo zeh." No, if neither one has the money to rebuild it, "Ein lo lebala liyav karka klum." Then no, the one who owned the aliyah doesn't own any part of the karka. He just leaves there, and he'll find someplace else to live, and the bala karka can sell it to Kohen Tadashi or plant the whole thing. The bottom floor owns the land. However, Tanya, Rav Nosson, but then we learn a Braita, another Braita, Rav Nosson says, the ground floor person gets two thirds of the land, and the one who was upstairs gets one third. Or achirim say, which usually means the mayor. It's not 2-1, but 3-1. The downstairs one gets 3/4, and the other one gets 1/4. So you have three different opinions. Amar Rabba, Nekot de Rav Nosson B'yadcha. So Rabba says you should take in your hand, you should stick to what Rav Nosson says. The Dayanahu, because Rav Nosson was a Dayan, he was the Avbeis Din. So therefore he's an expert in Dinei Mammon. Rav Nosson for Umka the Dinah. He gets down into the depths of the Din to understand the reason behind the Din. Namely, Kosovar, because Rav Nosson takes the view like this. Kama Mafsid Aliyah B'Bayis, how much does a second floor damage the downstairs floor? In other words, like this, if it was a one-story house, it would last for X number of years. Because it has the upper floor on it, therefore that weakens it, and therefore it falls down sooner. How much? Tilta, one-third. Hilcoff, he's
what
like,
do we have one third?
He figured out that empirically that's how it is. That if you had, for example, a one story house, let's say, might last for 90 years. The same thing with a second story built on it will last only 60 years.
6 years.
Hilcoff, Islay Tilsa. Therefore, it means that all this time the. So what does it mean? It means that when the place was built in the first place, he owned one third of it, because the one downstairs was saying, I'm willing to tolerate my house collapsing one third earlier than it would have otherwise in order to have a second floor. Well, therefore, that means he was willing to give him one third rights to the land. Therefore, he's entitled to one third. And that's the halacha.
Okay.